Hello, everyone, and you're listening to Derek White Sky Cloud, your favorite neighborhood psychic medium and paranormal investigator, and you're listening to the show called Between Two Worlds. It is now. Hi, folks, we're back again. This is Derek White Sky Cloud, your favorite paranormal investigator and psychic investigator as well. Anyways, we're getting back. We just had a bit of a glitch in as far as our phone lines are concerned, so everything just got all straightened out. We're back online. Now, those of you who are calling in, the toll-free numbers are 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227 in the U.S. And also those who are in Canada, 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322 in Canada. Those of you calling international from across the line, it's 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. I would like to welcome those who are actually coming onto the chat lines in the chat room, and also those who we want to recognize also there actually that are their newest affiliates that are actually syndicating our show Between Two Worlds is in the Netherlands called the Go Ed Began, and also we like to also acknowledge Lee Ramsey's Underworld, her paranormal radio program up in Australia. So I'd also like to welcome them and also thanking them for inviting us on their in their parts of the world. Now, those of you who wish to call in, now tonight what we're talking about basically is near-death experiences. Now, I've had myself three near-death experiences when I was young. It happened to me when I was about 8 years old, and which I went through a near-death drowning, and then again, the second time when I was about 18 years old, almost killed in a car accident where I rolled my vehicle and barely survived it. And then the third time, I went through a near-death experience of drug overdose from a painkiller that actually when I suffered from an accident in my back, and I went through an accidental overdose. So I know what this is all about, but I'm really excited to have someone new on this show. And when I heard about this lady, and I thought, you know what, I got to have her on this show for her to tell her story, what her messages were from Spirit that when she went through her book, she had written called Beyond the Tunnel, and her name is Suzanne Boehm. And welcome, Suzanne. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and it is truly an honor to be on your show this evening. Thank you kindly.
You're welcome. It's fabulous to have you here to join us. I read your book, and it absolutely is phenomenal. I mean, it reminds me of something that, you know, in a way, I want to laugh at it. You know, it's kind of comical in some parts, but I felt very, you know, I know very well it's very serious because I know what it is to go through near-death experience. But I have never in my entire life have ever seen anybody go through near-death experience on Novocaine, seeing a dentist getting your teeth done. That is different. Totally, totally different. But can you tell us your story, how that actually started?
Well, the dentist was working on a crown one day, and it was my regular dentist who I'd been to for 10 years. And he always used the same medication to deaden the nerves, although Novocaine is a layman's term. And he was having to clean some decay out around a nerve. And in so doing, I was in such pain, I kept asking him for another shot of Novocaine, because that's what I thought I needed, and just the pain wasn't going away. And I was talking to him just like I'm talking to you right now on the radio, and the pain wasn't going away, so he'd give me another shot until we had 5 shots of Novocaine. And he thinks somewhere between that 4th and 5th is where the Novocaine and what we understand any Idocaine will freeze the heart muscle. And evidently it froze the heart muscle, and I flatlined. So it really wasn't a near-death experience. It was a death experience.
I have never heard of anything like that before. I mean, I've had people go through accidents, drug overdose, you know, and your painkiller. I mean, which makes sense because your painkiller and my painkiller, mine was for my back. I mean, I actually had back surgery after, But I went through painkillers to the point that I actually was almost near the side of my cell. So it's pretty well almost the same thing. Mine was my back. Yours is your teeth. But again, you were going through dental surgery. But didn't you also wrote in your book also, you wrote the story about you were actually also in a car accident and you busted your jaw.
Yes, I did. Yes, as a teenager coming home from an archery championship that I had been at, a drunk driver ran through a red light and broadsided right smack in the middle of the car. And my jaw hit the steering wheel, and so I was wired up for almost a year, and it took most of my life to continue for the bones to settle and the teeth to settle and all of that. So I've been through a lot of dental work in my life, but this occasion was totally different. I mean, the pain was so excruciating,
yeah,
and it just wasn't affecting me whatsoever. And then once he gave me that last shot, and he gave it to me, he said, because I was still crying and from the pain, and so he gave me one last shot. Well, that did the trick. And I remember thinking, whoa, now he's got it right, because I'm feeling really good. And I felt buoyant and I started to relax. I could feel myself relaxing. And then all of a sudden, I found myself in this tunnel and thinking, wow, that put me out. And now where am I now? You know, but so my mind was in two places at the same time. I knew I was in the dentist office. I knew I just had another shot of Novocaine, and yet I was in this unusual place in the tunnel.
Wow. And okay, now, being in the tunnel, what did you see? What you felt did you see, or what did you hear around you?
Well, I saw a tunnel, and at the far, far end of that tunnel was a light, a bright, brilliant light. And I could see like specks of light in front of me kind of floating toward that light, and then they would be pulled through the light. And as I got closer and closer and closer to that light myself, I felt better and better and better. And I'm thinking, wow, that was a great shot. I got to ask him what it gave me. But that light then became almost like a vacuum cleaner, and it just pulled you right through, pulled me right through that white light. And all of a sudden, I was out of the tunnel, on the other side of the light, on the other side of life.
Wow. Yeah. Now, when you wrote in there also that you said that it says Christ is in charge, when did that start beginning to happen? What was that tone? When did this wording or tone or his voice
okay,
come to
you? Okay, that was the first voice that I heard when I transitioned from the dentist chair into the tunnel. Everything went dark. I got this voice in my ears that said, Christ is in charge. And I remember, you know, kind of shaking my head and thinking, what's that got to do with anything? I'm at the dentist office.
Yeah, like Christ is going to take your teeth out.
But you see, I didn't know I had died, and that was the instruction that, like, Christ is in charge of life. And my life was just going to the other side.
So yourself, you like, when did you decide that you felt that you went through that near-death experience?
When I was in the tunnel for what I would consider a few seconds, I totally forgot that statement, and there was no voices in the tunnel, just all these little specks of light. And as I got closer and closer to those specks of light, I discovered that they were beings like myself and floating in this tunnel toward this light and going through to the other side into this magnificent, magnificent rainbow of colors. It was absolutely awesome. And then I totally disconnected consciously,
uh-huh,
and was totally gone on the other side. And that's where they would consider that I had totally flatlined.
Now, was that the decision by a doctor, or was that the
Yes. The dentist, thank God, he was one of these modern dentists that goes to every seminar in the world and had all this modern equipment in his office, you know, because he said he knew right away I was in trouble, and so started preparing everything to try to get my heart kicked in again.
When you mentioned about knowing that you felt, that you heard both sides, like even though you know you're on the other side, but you also somehow knew the feeling of what was happening in the physical. Do you remember anything that the dentist was saying to you or sent to anybody, or was there anybody else in the background that said something while you're in that trance state?
No, not from the dentist office, but my mind was conscious of the fact that I was in the dentist office and that now all of a sudden I'm in this dark tunnel. But the minute I went through that bright light, there was a total disconnect from the conscious being in the dentist office. And I didn't meet other beings of light until I was on the other side, and until I had vocal, we'll say, speech with other beings.
Okay, so if you had speech with a being, did you know, did you recognize anyone in there, or just knowing of them?
Well, I perhaps should describe what happened first before I can answer that question, is when I found myself in that rainbow of colors, and I was going through it, there were these little sparkles that were smaller than the ones that was in the tunnel with me, and I kept looking around and looking around, and all of a sudden, those little sparkles would attach to the bright light of the being that was ascending through this rainbow. You're ascending all the time, kind of, and you're getting lighter and buoyant and feeling just totally magnificent and awed at being in this rainbow of colors, and it was kind of like an aurora borealis. And all of a sudden, there was my pet from my childhood, Rusty, who was a setter, and an Irish setter. And then I saw some other small animals that I had during my youth. And so I learned from that the souls of our pets, they wait for us. They're there. And then I found the aurora borealis rainbow of colors kind of parted, and I felt myself like I was in this funnel, like a funnel. You know how the funnel is very small, narrow pathway, and then it opens up at the top?
Yes.
And then on the edge of that were all these layers of white light, layer after layer after layer of white light. But this funnel, that little thin tunnel that went up to where a funnel would open, that was the last layer of white light, and it cradled this magnificent, brilliant light that sparkled and flashed in gold and like jewels, and yet it had rotated this magnificent different colors of lights, yellows and greens and pastels, and totally awesome. And I'm looking up at it, and I go, oh. And then as I pass through those white layers of light, that last layer of light that cradled this magnificent light, that's the first place where I recognize in that whole layer people who knew me, or beings of light. They knew me, they talked to me, and I knew them. But nothing like a child would have seen, like a grandparent or something like that. I knew them all, and they all knew me as if we'd known each other forever. And that was my only first time of recognition of other light beings, because I remember thinking, my gosh, what is going on here? And I kind of bent down to look at my body to pinch myself. But there was no body. It was only my mind,
yeah.
And which told me that, you know, when we die, we never die. We continue just at another plane, another level, and our mind never skips a beat. Not for one second. I knew every second what was going on, and I can still recount it as like it was yesterday.
What message continually be receiving more messages from spirit since you've had your near-death experience? Or have you just heard just the messages then at the time, which was your last near-death?
I only heard a conversation in that last layer of white light, and they said to me, we know where you're going, and we know that you know where you're going. And then, you know, I kind of am acting strange. I said, what do you mean I know where I'm going? I have not an idea what's going on here. And with that, I shot like a bullet to the middle of that bright light. And and then it swirled around me, and it was magnificent. And I felt like the woes of the world had just lifted off of my shoulders. It was the most magnificent sight and feeling. So I could see, I could think, I was talking with these other beings of light. That's the only way I can describe it, because the body form was gone. But yet it's like I had my head and my face and my eyes and my ears.
Okay. So basically, do you feel that you have to be a prophet to continue on the messages, or what is your work now besides writing this book? What's your job, or what are you supposed to be doing now to continue this further?
What am I doing further? Well, I was on the other side with in this magnificent ball of light, I heard this voice. And this voice speaks to me out of the light and says, you're safe. You're here with me. You're safe. And I'm looking around trying to see who this being is, who this person is, still thinking maybe like a human being instead of this light that I am now. And I says, well, who are you? I mean, are you trying to tell me that your spirit, that your the transcendent, the one, the source? And the answer comes out of this light, yes, I am the light. Yes, I am the light. And I asked him, and although my girlfriends here in California want me to say that I heard a woman's voice, I'm sorry, it was a man's voice, but like no other voice you've ever heard in your life. We could say angelic. I write in the book, it's like this blanket of ethereal blanket of love that just floats down over your body and just makes you feel totally engulfed in love. It was magnificent.
Yeah.
And then I had this whole conversation, and I was told that I had a choice to stay or I could come back, because I was told that I had earned my right to stay there. But if I came back, to come back and to mentor and tell people to do what they love to do. And that was funny, and I'll use the word spirit said to me at that time, if you will, God said to me, you know, he said, I don't get it. He says, everyone says that they are doing what they love to do, but then they spend a lifetime complaining about it. Just go back and tell them. Tell them to choose what they love to do, and then to do it with love. And you'll see a huge change. So the answer to your question, when I came back, my girlfriend called me and said, how would you like to start a Toastmasters communications class in the prison at the Miramar NAVCOM Brig? So I'm doing what Spirit told me to do. I am now mentoring to prisoners and passing the messages on from the book, from the experience that I had.
And have you felt there has been any effect with the people that since you've done your presentations?
We've had a wonderful response. I am now starting the ninth year of mentoring to these prisoners, and the warden told the lady that does that class with me together that they've never had such a wonderful response from a class and growth, and the prisoners get rid of the chips on their shoulders, and they learn how to communicate better, because it's about looking at things in a positive way instead of a negative way, and they're able to express themselves and realize that their mistakes is a hiccup in this life, and they have a choice, that they can choose to do something with their life instead of just staying in the it's someone else's fault, you know?
All right.
They look at themselves, reassess, and make new choices, and we prepare them to get back into society again.
Has anybody ever approached you about doing a documentary of you or any kind of thing regarding television?
Regarding what?
Regarding television. Has anybody approached you regarding television to do a documentary? Or?
No, not yet. That's probably our next step. I should say I did film in the documentary at the end of Final Destination 2. There is a whole documentary on the near-death experience that was filmed in Hawaii, and I am in that. And then just this last year, I sold the movie rights to a movie producer, and we're in early film development.
See, that's a movie.
So television will be coming up this year and next, most definitely.
Good. I have a funny feeling you're going to do very well with this. I feel the story itself, what you've written in here is, I find it, some parts of it very heart-wrenching that get your attention. And I've also noticed that you've actually have either your relatives that are related to you or, let's put it this way. Now, you've been adopted, but yet you were born with the family at first, like a by birth family, and then you were adopted out with your sister. And then you had quite the life yourself.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't actually adopted. I'm one of those children that got dropped through the cracks because at the time my birth mother put my sister and I in an orphanage, and you'll say ran away with a guy next door while my father was in the Navy. And the grandmother found us, but she could only keep one of us. So she gave me away to her sister. Then her sister gave me away to a friend. And then from a friend went to acquaintance to... I've lived with 13 different families and went to 15 different schools before I made it out of high school.
You sound like getting taken on trade beads. I mean, we passed trade beads, one to the family, and to another family, to another family. It sounds like you're more like an offering than you were actually a child that needs to be raised by a family.
Yeah, that's why I call that one chapter in my book, Beyond the Tunnel, the throwaway child. It's like my whole life nobody wanted me, so...
But you don't sound like the throwaway child.
Well, you know, sometimes tragedy has wonderful lessons to it, and it made me a survivor. And
I've met people who have been passed through the cracks. I mean, I used to work for the ministry, under the ministry, to protect children. And I've seen a lot of kids, teenagers, so bitter that they became jealous of a relative that was, say, a sister or brother's been adopted or been brought back to the family, but that child's never been brought back or accepted. And yet you don't sound bitter. You sound more like you're at peace yourself.
Oh, I'm not at all bitter. I mean, thank goodness I was passed around because it taught me how to restart, how to depend on myself, how not to be fearful of new changes, and that I had choices. Those are strong things that I had in my life, and because of that, so many people would tell me, well, that I couldn't do something. And, oh, that just irritated. I couldn't do something, and I was determined to show them that I could do something. Even my teachers told me in high school not to take a university courses because I was poor and I would never have any money to travel. So isn't it ironic that when I left high school, I went to Honolulu, Hawaii, where I met my European husband who married me, took me back to Europe for 20 years. But the transition, when he said, how would you like to go back to Europe with me? Well, for me, it was just another adventure.
Yeah, of course.
And so I spent 20 years in Europe and learning five different languages and owned a spa there for 20 years and then eventually retired with my former husband back to America after being a business person for 20 years myself. And then this happened in the dentist office, and the transcendent told me to, you know, take this information and all the things that he told me to do, bring it back and to write a book about it. And so I did. And he kept telling me, oh, and don't forget the missing ingredient. Don't forget the missing ingredient. So that's kind of something special. Toward the end of the book, you get to find out what the missing ingredient is. And he was quite pleased with himself. The good Lord acted as if he was the movie producer himself. And every once in a while, he took me through this life review. And he showed me things in my life. And at the end of each little sequence, he would come in with a beautiful, beautiful life lesson that I had learned from that. And just, I mean, totally magnificent things that he said to me. One of them was, although the struggle to learn can often be bitter medicine, it is always tempered with the sweetness of wisdom.
Wow.
And so all wonderful. Another lesson that he told me was, life moves in a circle. Everything bends back upon itself. You can take from it only that which you give out.
That's phenomenal. Now, also, too, I have another part of your book here, we talk about The Amazing Grace, one title. You actually, your family has a bit of history, even in the military.
Yes.
What is this? This is kind of strange. Even there, they're saying that you're...
In-laws, my husband's parents, yes.
Your husband's parents, yeah. Or one of the parents was actually a general?
Yes, he was a general in the German army, and so we used to sit at the dinner table, and he would talk about all of his events, the mother-in-law, she used to go shopping with von Richthofen's wife, and then Papa Böhm, he was totally fascinating, tell us all of the war stories, and he himself, after Rommel got captured in Africa, he was the next one in command. When the Americans came in, captured Rommel's troops, of which he was the general, and brought them back to Trinidad, Colorado, in a concentration camp here in America. And boy, when I was in school, nobody ever talked about us having concentration camps right here in America, but they were there. And then after the war ended, I guess the Red Cross reconnected them. But fascinating stories, even of how they all the generals got together, the ones that were the senior ones, and tried all the assassination attempts on Hitler at the time. So his part alone is a fascinating story.
Wow. I mean,
and I was privy to that. I mean, it was like if we would get to live with the president on the inside of the White House or something, or sit in the ready room, you know, that was fascinating. It was like living with a piece of history.
I just found that amazing when I'm reading that part regarding, you know, they're talking about Baron von Richthofen and the Red Baron and that Hitler was part of the story. And I thought, my God, I've never heard that. I mean, the guy's telling the story, and I thought all those generals actually didn't exist after. I don't want to be negative about it, but I thought there was a lot of negativity regarding that time period.
Oh, well, yeah, most certainly there is, but there was always a small core of the seniors because he had actually been he was a lieutenant in World War I, and then because of that, he was brought in as a general in World War II, but much later on. So the book Beyond the Tunnel has something for historian buffs also, history buffs, and for men like those war stories. And then, of course, the flying stories, any pilot out there would just really get a big kick out of the story and the chapter about doing my first solo flight when I got my pilot's license.
Did you throw up?
Did I throw up?
Yeah.
Oh, no. But when I got out of the plane after the solo flight, I did sink to my knees.
met some people that actually have tried to do solo flights, and then when they got, I mean, they're starting to get their time in, they put in their hours, and eventually one particular fellow, one lady I know, that she, by the time she was ready to do her class or course to pass it, she threw up. I was just curious if that happened to you, to finish off the course. You did get your pilot's license, didn't you?
Yes, I did. We started with 25 in the class and ended with 4 or 5, I think, and only one woman graduated. That was me.
And
that's another thing. I mean, all the time during my youth, I was told, "Oh, you can't do that. You can't do it." My teachers told me not to take university courses, because I'd never go out of the country, and I end up going out of the country and speaking 5 languages and owning my own business. And when I asked my then fiance, "Okay, we're up in your plane. Now, how do I get this thing down if you get sick?" And he says, "Learn to fly." And I said, "Learn to fly?" He says, "Yeah, but don't expect me to pay for it." He said, "Because women quit." And so that was just a red flag to me, red flag, you know. So we got down, got out of the plane, and I walked into the school, signed up, and 6 months later I had my pilot's license.
You remind me a lot of me. When I was a kid in school, our teachers used to say to us, say, "You got X amount of categories you got to choose from, and a very small amount of categories to choose from. As far as an occupation is concerned, if you don't choose any of those occupations, you're going to be a loser or go to jail." And I didn't like that, what their attitude was at the time. And this is like, oh, God, years and years and years ago. But you remind me of me, because when you were told the negative part of it, that you won't amount to much because you're poor, and I went through the same thing in my family, and here I am, I'm a counselor. And I went to my 30-year school reunion just last summer, and I would say about 90% of the students, they're still in the same area where they grew up, never left. The others maybe moved to the outer part of the city or into the larger city, because this is mostly a farming community, and yet there's only 2 of us out of all the 150 students of that year, 2 of us moved to British Columbia, which is one province over, but we took the chance. Our careers are not the same as these other people, and yet they told me, and the teachers told me, that I was going to be, as far as they're concerned, that I was going to be a thug and a guy in a jail and the whole time, and here I am. I'm a counselor. And I just basically shocked the heck right out of everyone. I told them what my job is, what my career is. I work as a medium, counselor, the whole 9 yards, radio show host. And they're like, their mouths just fell. They didn't expect me to have that career. And yet they're still struggling themselves. And yet I'm not putting down what they did, but we ourselves, you and I and others like ourselves, we proved them wrong. We put up those red flags. We made the intent to happen. And the thing is, if when someone challenges you, you're not going to stop. You're going to go do it anyways.
Yeah, well, there is a saying to that. In order to pick the fruit, you've got to go out on the limb.
Yeah.
And I wanted some of that fruit.
Well, it looks like you have so far. You're doing quite well.
Yes, it's. You know, that's something else that God had said to me, and you find in one of the life lessons in the book, Beyond the Tunnel. In order to achieve anything, we have to accept and assume responsibility for creating it and making the necessary changes in our lives.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. I mean,
if you do nothing, you get nothing.
Yeah, you got to make the intention. If you don't make the intention, how can you get there?
Yeah.
You know, people will say, "Why me? Why me? Why not you?" If you're dealing with issues that are on the negative side, and if you want it negative, that is your choice. If you want to make it positive, you make it in the intention. That's basically called the laws of attraction. And so God's word, laws of attraction, was that was meant to be. You're never judged for who you are. And this is the thing. A lot of people in society today are still sitting in judgment, thinking that they have failed if they don't accomplish something in life. And, you know, they need to understand that you can never have to worry about your parent judging you or a teacher judging you. You need to make the intention and prove them wrong. Prove them wrong. Just do your own thing. Just prove them wrong. If you want something, you have to make it work for you. But don't expect them to always give you praise, because they themselves don't know how to answer those, what you've accomplishments, your accomplishments. They don't know what to say. They're standing there like they're in awe, like, how is it you could do it? Like, you overcame your father's issue yourself when he told you that you turned 16, that you were going to go to jail.
Well, it has a lot to do, don't you think, with faith in yourself and why we need to let the world know, all of the people know, that they have to have faith in themselves, because faith is not arrived at easily. It is the struggle that gives faith its power and its meaning. And so struggle is good along with it. It's like having both sides of the coin. You've got a front cover to a magazine and a back cover. And the struggle and the suffering are part of being human. And it is how you bear your burden that makes the difference.
Yes. But you learn your lessons. Like, basically, if you're, like, you talk about the front and back magazine, but in that magazine, doesn't always talk about the positive things. Depending what type of magazine, if it's about glamour, you're going to get glamour. If you're getting a magazine like a newspaper, about 70 to 80% of it is on the negative side, is that's the suffering. So we have to look at it saying, okay, what can we do for those people? Those are suffering. Can we help them out? What do we have to do? Do we have to be like the prophet? Do we have to be the messenger? Do we have a mentor? What's our job? We have to choose that. And did God or did Spirit ever say to you that this is your job, that it has to be this, or did you choose that yourself?
No, He gave me the choices. And, of course, I had to search out my own choices. And I even asked Him, you know, why are you talking to me? I'm no one from nowhere, you know, or something like that, you know. Because you're so shocked that you are with the Creator. And He's funny. He has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
He says, well, gee, He says, you know, you had so much patience, and always you sought to talk with me, when even from childhood on. He says, and then He pauses and says, gee, maybe I should have called you Ms. Job. I remember I started laughing. I said, oh, my God. God has a sense of humor. Well, why wouldn't He? He has, everything comes from Him.
Yeah, well, we have to do that. We still have to have fun. I mean, especially like myself, when I talk to Spirit and I give people messages from Spirit, they like to joke around. It's not always serious. And yet people do, they do get upset the fact they lost a loved one. But the thing is that they like to bring in humor from the other side, just to bring it up a tone. That's a good thing to have. Now, also, you actually talked about even though the journey you had with Spirit and with God, do you feel you trust this message? That you feel you need to do more, or has they told you that they're going to be telling you more in the future of more work, of what type of work you'll be doing?
Well, my main assignments, if you were, Will, was to write the book. I never dreamed I'd sell the book manuscript or the movie manuscript to a producer. So that is just, I think, another way to get the communication out to more people faster than even just the book itself. The book was the springboard. And to do more television and mentoring and teaching other people to turn around and mentor once they've got whatever it is they're doing, like even with the prisoners, once they've got the communication course down and things are going well from them and they're more balanced, and then we teach them to turn around and help us teach. And more for me, I got very creative after that experience, and he had given me three symbols, the comet, the star, and the circle, and told me to make something with them. And so I made three pieces of jewelry, one, the light of love, the circle of souls, and my lucky star. And those people could see on my website, talk2000.us. But I don't know, things keep evolving. One thing will touch something else, and I just have to follow the pathway. And that's another thing. I said, how will I remember this? And he said, you will be guided. You'll get guiding. And another funny thing is, he says, I love your digital clocks. He says, every time you get three numbers in a row, you know exactly what you were doing at that moment or were thinking. That is a confirmation, affirmation that was the right thing. You're on the right pathway. He said, pay attention to the messages and the messengers on the pathway. They will be there. And so all we have to do is pay attention and almost like you would say, listen to your inner instinct.
Yeah, trust your inner instinct.
And I kept finding coinage in threes and in the strangest places, in the woods, in a horse park, places that people would normally, you know, why did you open the door of your car and your foot steps out on three coins? And so I feel that we're being guided.
Yeah.
We are being, but we have to pay attention to the messages and never, ever let anybody steal our dream. That was one of the strong messages that was given to me. And
that's a good philosophy from spirit, because at times people like to take other people's ideas away from them and tell them that it's not going to work, and then when that person decides not to do it, somebody else will do it. That happens at times too. Take their ideas, and then they realize that they haven't accomplished what they feel they haven't accomplished, and some people will tend to have to make decisions by giving up. But I always encourage people out there, no matter what you think that someone's taken something from you, never stop, just continue on doing, making those plans. Things are always meant to happen.
Yeah, you have to also guard yourself from this world, too. And you keep getting pulled in, and I feel like I'm on the edge. I mean, I know I'm on borrowed time, because he said that I had earned my right to stay. So every day that I live here is a special gift. And having been on the other side and in the space of the Creator and the Transcendent, you totally become very sensitive to creativity, to small creatures. I could sit for an hour and watch a hummingbird on my patio and just amaze and marvel at the mechanism of it, you know.
Yeah. Do you trust, I got a really funky question to ask you. Do you trust dentists?
A funky question. Okay, what's a funky question?
Funky question is really, we call it the foolish question. Do you trust dentists?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've had that question many times. This dentist and his wife are personal friends of mine. And when it originally happened, I didn't tell him about being on the other side. He just brought me back, and I insisted on going home, but he held me there in his back office for the rest of the day to make sure I was okay. But I had been given a goal, a project, a job to do, and so it wasn't until 2 weeks later when I went to dinner with him and his wife that I explained to him what happened. And he says, oh, my God, you got to write this book, you know. And he's continued to be my dentist. And bless his heart, he gave me the greatest gift that could ever be given to a human being. And that's to have been in the same space with the Creator and to feel that enormous love. And the explanation of who we are as spiritual beings ourselves. And he said, you were before, you are now, and will forever be connected spiritually. But to have consciousness of that, and just even talking about it, I'm immediately back in the same place with the same glorious, magnificent feeling that, you know, it's, and he talks about, you know, when we finally come to our graduation day, which we call death, he called it graduation, yeah, and does a metaphor for me that I write in the book, and that should be celebrated, like when we get a diploma at college or high school, or you know, any time that we accomplish something new, it's another step up, another step in our spiritual growth and accomplishment. And so he wants that celebrated. It should be light and lively and music and colors, and because when you come to the last graduation where you're back to the spiritual being, having been there, there is nothing better. It's just the most incredible. Everything is known to you.
There have been a lot of people that actually, you know, if you look at them, a lot of them actually fear death. We hear those stories all the time. They are taught this through Christianity, for example, through some Christian belief systems. And I know in the book that you've also written, you've actually, when you were went through the, I guess say, the adoption families passed down, you experienced a lot of religions.
Oh, boy, that was for sure. Each of those 13 families had a different religion. So, I mean, I've been Catholic, I've been Jewish, I've been, the only ones I don't think I was, wasn't a Buddhist, but I've been a Baptist and a Lutheran, and I could go on and on and on, a touch of all of them. And the one thing that they all had in common was that the Creator, the One, the Source, God was at the helm of each of those religions. And so that's why when I was a young child and I wasn't adopted by any of those families, they each kept me for a year and passed me on to someone else. But I learned a lot about all those religions, and it confused me.
Well, it's a good thing that you didn't have to go through husbands that way as well.
Pardon?
It's a good thing you didn't go through husbands as well, one per year, as you did growing up as a child.
Yeah, well, boy, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? I said my vows and I meant it, and that I wanted to be with him for life, and it didn't work out that way because he had different plans. But again, going through becoming single again gave me another new area of growth to learn that I didn't have to be married to someone to be whole. See, I had been abandoned for so many years of my life that was a big issue for me. So when I found a husband to marry me, man, I was determined to love, honor, and be there for him the rest of my life. And I thought that made me a whole person.
Yeah.
Now I'm whole. Now I'm complete. It wasn't until I was single again after 20 years of marriage that I learned through a slow process that I'm a whole person all by myself and that I can make choices. I don't have to have a man to make those choices for me. I can make those choices.
Yeah.
I was able to save enough money to buy myself my first home, and I remember after I got the deed and it was all clean and clear and everything, the attorney opened a bottle of champagne and said, you know, when someone buys something on an option, a leased option, he says, in all my years of being an attorney, I never heard of anybody ever exercising the option. And here we were toasting that I exercised the option, I got my down payment, and I owned this home all by myself, and I sit in the empty empty home, waiting for my furniture to come, thinking, oh my gosh, I bought this. I always thought only men could do that. You know, nothing against men, but women in my day were not taught that they could own anything. I think we were more taught, you know, we're here to make babies and be barefoot and live on a brick street.
What year were you born?
I'm 63 years old. I was born in 43.
So you're still a puppy.
Pardon?
You're still a puppy.
Yes. I'm still learning. Every day I learn something new.
Yeah, you're doing really well. There is actually another person that I was quite interested in. I used to actually read when you'd find Betty J. Eddy's books everywhere, Eddy books, everywhere on the bookshelves here in Canada. And I read both her two books and her third one that came out recently, not too long ago. And it says in here that you met her.
Yes, I did. Oh, that
was... How did it feel when you met her?
Fascinating. Quite briefly, I'll try to make it as brief as possible. About a week or 2 weeks after I had the experience, I went to pay my mortgage payment, and believe me, when a newly single woman pays her mortgage payment, there's nothing left afterwards. And I just walked out of the post office from dropping my check in the mail and went past the table where there was a magazine, and it had Embraced by the Light by Betty Eddy. And, oh, I grabbed that magazine up because I knew nothing at that point about the near-death experience. And I opened it up, and it said that she was going to be speaking in San Diego, just 45 minutes away from me. And within the hour. And so I jumped in my car because I'd been told to pay attention to the messengers. I said, I gotta hear this lady speak. And I drove as fast as I could to San Diego and got in time to hear her speak. And her story and things she was saying was almost identical to what I had just lived through or died through. I don't know what you want to say there. And so I'm standing in line waiting to talk with her. They'd queued up in front of the lectern. And all of a sudden she stands up on the podium, excuse me, and she looks down this long line, walks down the steps, stops at me, and I'm way back, I must be 14th or 15th in line, and she looks at me and starts crying, and I start crying, and she says, "You've been there too." And I say, "Yes," and we just both started crying and hugged each other, and then she whispered in my ear, "Did they tell you to write?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "You go home and you start writing." Well, I'd already written for a week. I mean, it's like, if you've seen Conversations with God, it's that I locked myself in my bedroom for a week and just wrote incessantly. I just couldn't stop. I had to get everything out of my head before I was afraid I'd forget it. And then after a week, I backed away and looked at it, and the whole outline to the book was there.
Wow. Absolutely phenomenal.
Betty's the one who told me to go home and write, and I started.
Well, good for her. I'm glad that she supported you in this way. Suzanne, I would like to thank you for joining me on this show, and a lot of our listeners actually are listening in. A lot of them didn't want to cut in on our conversation, so they've all apologized, but they have been listening in. What I would like to do is to actually ask for your website if they want to make contact with you, and your book is called Beyond the Tunnel. If they want to order this book, and who do they order it from, you or other online?
It's the publisher's website, beyondthetunnelbook.com. You have to put the book in there, beyondthetunnelbook.com, otherwise you get a music group.
Beyondthetunnelbook.com.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Suzanne, it's been a pleasure having you on here. I'd like to get you to come back sometime later on, and we can talk about more about this and see what your other adventures have been in the future. And see what's happening later on. I'd like to thank you very much for coming on our show, in my show. And folks, if any of you actually have ever dealt with a near-death experience, please give Suzanne and myself a call. You can give us a call at my website is whiteskycloud.com. You can email me at whiteskycloud@yahoo.com. Or you can email Suzanne. And Suzanne, what is your email?
Suzanne at... Talk, 2000.us.
That's number 2000, right?
Yeah, it's 2000. Talk 2000 at Suzanne at talk2000.us.
Okay. Suzanne, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So anyways, folks, it's been a blast having you, everyone here listening in on the Between Two Worlds. And next week, I'll be back on again. And in the future, we're also going to bring back also a lady by the name of Joanne Giroux, and she's going to be bringing on a friend of ours to beside her, we sharing with some information in the future regarding health. So everyone, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me, and we shall see you. Take care and talk to you next Tuesday at 8 o'clock. And this is Derek White Sky Cloud signing off. Take care, guys. Bye.